I'm a passionate region woman because I believe that your geography is not an obstacle to your success.
I'm a passionate regional woman because to me, regional WA is real and raw.
My work gives me the opportunity to travel all over this incredible state and to meet the most amazing people, for which I'm incredibly grateful.
It's all those personalities that make up our diverse communities. It's the people that make here a vibrant place to live.
I believe regional communities cannot achieve economic prosperity without talented regional women living in rural Australia.
It's what makes regional WA the best place to live and love. And that's why I'm a passionate regional woman.
Welcome to the Triple R Network podcast series by Generation Ag. We're your hosts, Kayla Evans and Lavinia Ware.
Hello, we're back for another episode, number nine.
Number nine, bright and early. What time has it been? 7 o'clock.
It's 7:01 a.m. Can I just say I'm so wide awake?
Same, yeah.
I don't know whether it's because I'm so excited because we have a fun day and we get to spend the day together on a weekday and we never get to do this.
Yeah.
Or we've just got so much happening. Life's so exciting right now.
It is exciting right now. And I think the other exciting bit is driving out into the wheat belt and getting to see the glory that is all the canola and the lupins in flower at the moment. So super excited to, number one, get out of the city, and number two, to do it with you.
And we get to, I'm sure today we will also get to see plenty of people who we have in our network that we haven't been able to see over the last couple of months. And Kayla and I are really about surrounding ourselves around those people who are like-minded. Mm. So it's really special when we get to connect with those people.
Yeah, especially in person. So, no, really excited. It's our ninth episode of the Triple R Network series. It feels like we're just getting closer and closer to the end.
I know, it's so sad because it's been such a special series. So for anyone listening who might not have heard, the Triple R Network is rural, regional and remote women, and it's all about meeting like-minded women who develop ideas, connections and become leaders in their community, and being the voice on the ground for important issues that impact women.
And we thought it was about time, if you've listened through the whole series and you've been enjoying it and you've been hearing all the women talk about how amazing the Triple R Network is and how great it is to be part of that community, we thought we might actually talk about the membership of Triple R Network this week, just because we haven't done that yet. So just quickly running through the levels. The first level is that you're a contributor, or that you support Triple R, and you can do that with a $25 once-off payment. And that gets you an I Support Triple R sticker and I believe acknowledgement on social media as well. Mm-hmm. And you also get free webinar access. So $25 for a year's worth of webinar access.
What great value just to be surrounded by women like that. It's phenomenal. And then you've got the contributor, which is Friends of Triple R. So it's a $10 upfront payment and a $4.50 payment a month. No voting rights, but it's an easy one. Reoccurring payments. You receive Triple R, Keep Cup, like... How good is that? As if you notice $4.50, that is a coffee. That is a coffee a month. It's nothing.
And then for all of you young people out there, because we know our Generation Ag audience is typically under 35, mm-hmm. If you're still a student, membership to the Triple R Network is actually free. And with that membership, you get voting rights. So you get to be an active member of the Triple R Network community. And they give you super awesome benefits like 20% off discounts to ticketed events, invitations to online briefings, research and advocacy, and other professional development opportunities as they arrive, which is pretty cool if you're a student.
Absolutely. And then you've got the startup members, which is $100, and you get guest blog authors, free webinar access, voting rights. I mean, that's great value if you're starting out and you just want to expose yourself to the rural, regional, remote women's network. I think it's a great one. Yeah. And then lastly, the connectors, which is kind of a level up from that, which is all about being a part of the business directory, advisory, voting rights, and you get to host webinars. So if you're that next level wanting to be an authority in your industry within the agricultural, rural, regional, remote space, this is an amazing one for you.
Yes, it's great. And actually, of all the membership-based networks I've ever been a part of, this is actually quite affordable. And we've heard week after week in these episodes how valuable it is. And I just think, why wouldn't you?
Absolutely. So we're going to get into today's Women of the Week. So this one goes out to a New South Wales woman, but she kind of works between New South Wales and Queensland, and her name is Talia Ellis. Some of you might have actually heard of her before. So she and her husband have actually bought the Birdsville Pub and Bakery, and she's a pilot herself, and they fly from their farm in New South Wales, 1,800 kilometres, up to the pub every now and again. Obviously with COVID, they've had a lot of logistical issues and haven't been able to get up there. But myself, I don't know if you're listening, if you've been to Birdsville, and I was just saying to Kayla, she's got to go. It's such an iconic place, and they host the Big Red Bash, which is a massive music festival, and the Birdsville races. It's an amazing place. So the Ellises, they co-founded a company called Outback Spirit. I'm sure a lot of you are aware of that company. And Outback tourism has always been something they're really passionate about. So the fact that they run their farm and these businesses remotely is actually phenomenal. So I just thought this was a really different one. And I told Kayla about the story and she thought it was amazing. So just a, yeah, really good feel good one. And I think it's amazing. We've got women out there, you know, hustling. Like, she's a pilot. She's a boss woman. How cool.
I love it. And whilst we're talking about their issues accessing their businesses with COVID, I actually wanted to give a quick plug to our this week's episode, or actually it would have been last week's episode of the Generation Ag podcast. I spoke to Rebecca Barry, who is a farmer from, well, South Australia, but also just across the border in Victoria as well. Some of you might have seen her stuff on social media, really struggling with access across the border. She was separated from her kids, one of her children, for a while. And then just having issues moving between their two farms, which are 500 kilometres apart. So just a quick little plug there. If you haven't listened to that and you're really passionate about listening to rural women speak, then that was a really good one as well.
And there's also more about that on our Instagram. So if you want to jump over there, Generation Ag on Instagram, there's a great video up as well.
Yeah.
Kayla, do you want to get into this week's guest? You have the pleasure of doing the interview.
Yeah, well, speaking of incredible South Australian women, I was delighted to speak to a West Aussie expat, Danielle England. So Danielle grew up in Lake Grace, and she's a really widely known member of our rural communities here in WA. She moved to South Australia full time about 3 years ago to her husband's family farm, and it was just a delightful conversation to have with her. She is an incredibly connected, knowledgeable, outgoing woman, and I just loved, you know, chatting to someone who's had such an incredible career and is just moving forward in leaps and bounds and is just embracing this time of agriculture and this time of adversity in our society, you know, really strongly, and just looking at it as an opportunity to move ahead and to move our industry ahead. And so it was a great chat. I was super excited to have the opportunity, yeah, to sit down and talk to her via Zoom.
Yeah.
And she had a bit of an interesting story as well about how COVID has affected their family with her daughter who attends boarding school. So.
Oh, okay. That's really interesting one. Yeah. All those logistics.
Good and sensitive chat there as well. So it's a really robust episode. We talk about all different things. I'm excited to introduce her to you today. Danielle England is a recognised leader within Australian agriculture based in the southeast of South Australia. Over the past 20 years, Danielle has built a strong reputation for delivering agricultural extension and change management programs that work. She works closely with grower groups, research organisations, private advisors and farm businesses to deliver programs that optimise farm profitability and productivity. Danielle has been listed in the Emerald 2014 100 Women in Australian Agribusiness list and was the 2013 Western Australian RIRDC Rural Woman of the Year. Both of these awards recognise her outstanding leadership and passion for the Australian agricultural industry. Danielle has managed multiple mixed farming research and development programs, including Grain and Graze 3 in WA for GRDC, the Grains Research and Development Corporation, in cooperation with the FACI Group. Danielle studied her Bachelor of Agribusiness Marketing via Curtin University at the Mures campus and has a graduate certificate in Rural Systems Management through the University of Queensland Gatton campus, as well as a diploma in project management, and is a member of the Australian Institute of Company Directors. A fabulous resume, and I'm excited for you to hear from her today. Danielle England, welcome to the RRR Network podcast by Generation Ag. Thank you so much for sitting down with me this morning.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me here.
Yeah, how's your day going?
My day's, it's 9 o'clock in WA, but it's 10:30 over here. So we've already been out landmarking and we've got the staff on board, and remote learning in the middle of COVID-19 has started. So, yep, we're into today.
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit about that. I guess the experience of having the kids at home during COVID later on. But we always start with having our guests tell us a little bit about themselves. And also, you know, what's your connection to agriculture?
Yeah, thanks, Kayla. I grew up, I'm in Lake Grace, and I'm a proud Lake Grace girl. And one of the things that Lake Grace showed me was the value of community and the value of agriculture to community. Agriculture is the main industry for a lot of Western Australia and a lot of regional and remote Australia, actually. And I think we undervalue in agriculture and our rural industries just what the ag industry provides, and the value and the local economy that it actually drives is really phenomenal. So that's what I grew up with. I grew up as a part of that small rural community who looked out for each other, who was quite forward-thinking and prepared to take chances and risks to, I guess, not only improve their business but improve the lot for their family. So, yeah, that's me.
Tell us a bit about your childhood. You grew up on a farm?
Yeah, so I grew up on a farm, as I said, at Lake Grace, and then went away to boarding school in Perth, and then after that came home to the farm for a few years, and I looked at the people that I thought I'd like to do their jobs, and they'd all been through Muresk. So I trundled out to Muresk and completed a Bachelor in Agribusiness Marketing with first class honours in rural leadership, and then started work with Rural Press, actually. So completed that for a couple of years as a rural journalist, and I fell in love with Jonathan, and he was a South Australian boy on a farm in the southeast of South Australia where I'm based now. And after a few years here, after Georgina was born, we moved back to WA. We're in WA for 12 years. And we've just come back to the family farm in South Australia 3 years ago. This will be our fourth season, I think, here. So, yeah, so we're getting there. Nearly local again.
Yeah, you are. I think, what is it, 6 or 7 years before you can officially call yourself a South Australian local?
Yeah, probably. I think most communities are about the same.
Yeah. So talk me through, you know, you graduate with your Bachelor of Agribusiness Marketing. You know, what's your career trajectory look like?
So it's kind of, I've never been one to turn down an opportunity, I suppose. So even if it's something that I think, oh, that might work, or, gee, I'd really like to work with those people. So that sort of led me, I guess, people look and go, oh, my God, Danny, you're flitting between everything. But it has allowed me to meet some really awesome people and to work with some awesome people. So, yes, I worked for Rural Press for 2 years, and then I joined PIRSA. So the primary industries and region South Australia, I had to think about that one, as a crop and pasture agronomist. So that led me down the line of pastures, and I really love seeing a good pasture. And then when we moved across to WA, I worked for the Department of Ag in Western Australia, and then worked for Plan Farm after that for a few years as well, which was an absolutely awesome experience, and managed the grain and graze programs for GRDC through that time, which was looking at pastures in the cropping rotations. And I guess that's where my specialty lies. I've been working in that phase now for about 12 years, and doing some work over on the East Coast as well as still some projects on the West Coast. It's nice to know that it truly is, you can create a national role for yourself, so it probably doesn't matter where you are based. So I started Ag Innovate in 2014-ish. That'd be right, 2014, when it was just, I had aging parents and young families, and it was time just to create a little bit of space for myself. And I think that's what most women actually like in working for themselves, is that ability to pick and choose the projects you'd like to work on, the people you'd like to work with, and also been really lucky in the areas I work, because I have been able to maintain some of the intellectual stimulus as well, which is, I really value that, and I value working with other researchers and leading farmers in the type of work I do. I think it's, I know it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. So you mentioned Ag Innovate. Do you want to tell the listeners what that is, and tell us a little about your role and how we got started?
Yeah, so Ag Innovate is a small team of extension specialists. So we work with other consultants and people within primary industries and grower groups to, I guess, bring new research ideas out onto farm, basically. So with that, we sit down with the researchers and the funding bodies, and we have a look at where the new tool or technology sits, the areas, the geographical areas that would fit in best. And then we design an extension program or a communication and activities program around that. And then we help them, I guess, upskill their staff to be able to deliver that, and then just generally play a mentoring role as they work through the program. So some of these people we've been working with, as I said, for, you know, 10 or 12 years now. Some people we've just picked up in the last few years, and as usual, there's new ones coming on. So there's never a dull moment in our day. It's great. It's good fun.
Yeah. It sounds like a pretty niche space to sort of carve out a spot for yourself in.
Yeah, there's a few of us around. I've got a postgraduate qualifications in rural extension, and I guess I try and keep up internationally with what's happening in the extension space. I think there's a bit of an understanding, or a bit of a misunderstanding, I should say, that extension's easy, because once you've done the research, it's just a matter of writing a research paper and everybody will know it's there. Well, I actually don't know any farmers who read research papers. So, and I, even me, who work with a lot of researchers, don't read research papers. So it is actually a really specialist skill, you're right. And we've got a great team nationally and internationally who tend to work together, which is awesome.
And speaking of your team, your business model or structure is that you set it out so people can work from home, and that's how you run everything?
Yeah, it is. There's Rebecca Wallace in WA, and we've got Linda Highgate in Queensland, and myself here in South Australia. And it is. It's very much around being able to work from home. Beck and I are obviously on farms, Linda's not, and we, it's about providing flexibility between families and farms, which sometimes if you're working from an office in town or with a bigger corporation, that flexibility sometimes is not there. So for us, it's a great fit. We tend to work between each other and work out if somebody's a bit overloaded this week, somebody else or this month, pick it up. And yeah, it's a it's a great group of people and we enjoy each other's company. So I guess that's what makes the system work.
Yeah. Tell me and the listeners what a day in the life looks like for you.
I was just trying to think about that. I saw that question written down for me and I went, oh, my God, what does it look like? So I guess this week I've got 4 Zoom meetings like now. There'll be about 50 emails. There'll be a couple of, leads to follow up with some future work to go on. There's some core interviewing to be done for an NRM board here locally in South Australia. So it really is varied between the different aspects of my job of communicating and networking. That's a really, really big part of my job, and just making sure that if we're working with you or you're involved in ag or the ag extension space, not purposely, but I like keeping in touch with people. So it is a big part of my job, just those general conversations as they go along. So a general day is really checking emails. I chunk out bits of time. So I will put all of, if I'm working for an NRM board, I'll put that into a big 2-3 hour block, get that done. And then if I'm working for a livestock group, I'll get that done. That's how I found it works best. The family commitments go in first, as usual. Mm-hmm. They're very easy to let go and just think, oh, she'll be right, but they're actually not right. And now that Georgina is a teenager, I'm recognising the importance of putting that first. And it probably was a bit easier when she was in childcare when she was 3 because you could just focus for the day. And it's not until you get to the age and you go, yep, actually teenagers are like having toddlers again. And you do need to give them a bit of time and a bit of love. So it's great. It's really good.
Yeah, it sounds like you've achieved, I guess, some semblance of, I don't know if work-life balance is the right word, but it seems like the areas of your life that are important to you, you really balance quite well.
Oh, I don't know that we'll ever, ever get there, but we we do try and put, and just little things like putting your own oxygen mask on first to make sure that you have what you need to be able to provide that support and care to other people. And I think as working mums, we often forget that, and we're all guilty. So I'm not going to put my hand up and say, I've got it all worked out. And next week will look completely different to today. But yeah, we get there.
Yeah. Talk to me about, you've had quite a diverse and varied career, and you've been over a couple of states working with people in all areas of the world in agriculture. What are some of the big lessons you've learned along the way, and maybe this podcast series is about rural women? What are some advice specifically you would share with rural women you've learned along the way?
There are some absolutely amazing women out there. I have sat in some research meetings or even just general community meetings and watched women just shine. Like, these are super duper intelligent, leading thinking women. And whenever I'm in a meeting like that, that fills my cup. It is just absolutely awesome to see people operating in their specialist zone. For me, I've been lucky. I graduated in about 1998 or 7, someone will tell me about that. It was about the time that the internet was coming through. My internet is now unstable, but the internet was coming online, all those things. And that actually opened up a lot of freedom and flexibility to be able to run businesses from home and to create a, you could check your emails from home and all those things. You no longer had to go into the office. So I guess as time's gone on, I've been able to adapt to that. And I say we because We're just now, other people that we work with, we're delivering all our extension training online. So we've moved into the, into the group spaces on through Zoom, and we're actually, it's really, and splitting, instead of doing one full day, you might do two or three part days. So we're adapting as life changes and as technology catches up. We've still got a little way to go with internet, and I don't think the NBN and satellite service is probably doing what it needs to. But look at this. You can be sitting in Perth. I can be sitting at Kalara, and we're chatting away, and it's really quite okay. So that for me has been one really big bonus that had I have graduated 10 years before, probably wouldn't have been there to grow as my business, and I guess my professional roles grew as well. So I guess the lessons, if we want lessons from that, I guess make the most of the technologies as they come along. Mm-hmm. And also I think it's great to just take the time to reflect on other people's successes and enjoy those with them as well.
Yeah, my co-host and I, Lavinia, were just reflecting this week on just how little we take the time to look back and go, wow, what a massive year it's been. Or, you know, even since, you know, this year's been huge and challenging for everybody, just to, what a better time to sit and go, wow, look what we did this year in the face of all of the adversity that we've had, you know, droughts, fires, you know, COVID. And I think it's so important. I really love that piece of advice.
Yeah, exactly. And even just to for us to adapt within extension, you know, we've gone from running field days with 500 people to within a matter of months now doing these field days virtually. So hats off to agriculture that in the space of 6 or 8 weeks you have transformed how you deliver what you do. And it's probably not so obvious potentially in WA, because I think you guys are still running some of your field days. But over here in South Australia, and especially with some of the groups I work with in Victoria, they've really changed the way they're working. Mm-hmm. And it's great to see that adaptation continuing. And it'll be, I mean, it's a societal comment, isn't it? What's it going to look like in another 2 years as to whether we keep some of these new technologies or whether we go back to, you know, in the pre-COVID days, I don't know about your house, but we sit there and look and think, this must have been filmed pre-COVID because, look, they've got an audience, you know, yeah. That sort of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. No, the virtual field day, the phenomenon of the virtual field day is something I've been delighted to see the industry just, you know, we've been challenged to open our minds to the technology that we've maybe been reluctant to use in the past. And I think how exciting that this has pushed us to do that, because it only means, we're proving ourselves to be resilient yet again, and we always seem to in this industry.
Yeah, absolutely. And in some ways we've had access to, I'm not going to say better speakers, but different thoughts, because they can come in from anywhere. They don't have to be just 10Ks down the road. It's awesome.
Well, speaking of events and speakers, I guess let's move into asking and discussing some of the awards that you've won throughout your career. In 2013 you won the Western Australian Rural Woman of the Year. Do you want to share with us, you know, reflections on that time and that experience?
Yeah, Rural Woman of the Year is actually, it's a really, really big honour, and there's a lot of prestige placed on you by the West Australian community, or the Australian, actually, rural community. And so it should be, because it is the premier award for rural women in Australia. And there are some absolutely awesome, awesome women amongst the cohort in there. It's also a year of quite a lot of stress, and it takes probably 2 to 3 years for your stress levels to come back to somewhere near normal. So I'm back to being kind of normal, as I've ever been. But that was a great year. The doors that opened for me were phenomenal. And a lot of those particularly national networks now, I still treasure. And some of the friendships that come out of there are really, really exciting. One of the good things, I talk about it being quite a stressful year and a busy, it's not just busy, there's actually a lot of emotional stress that goes on in there as well, but is that that's recognised by the alumni, and so there's a lot of support around the this year's recipients and the last couple of years, because we all recognise that there's a little bit of healing time that needs to go into that. I'm not quite sure how as an industry we move forward with that, but maintain the prestige that the award has. But it's really important to note for people. As I said, I met some awesome people. I was challenged, and I guess you step up to those challenges, which is great. And some of the friendships, as I said, I formed will be there forever, which is absolutely brilliant.
And do you feel like, you know, really sort of put your career on a bit of a rocket ship, let's say? Like, did it really sort of, you know, boost, you know, the direction you were headed, or did it change things for you drastically, or it just sort of reaffirmed what you already thought about where you were going in your career?
I don't think I noticed a really big change in the career. It probably did give me more authority to stand up and talk about the role of extension and the role of private advisors in extension, which was a great opportunity. At that time, Ruth Nettle at the University of Melbourne was also doing some work around the role of the private advisor in the extension space, so that was really lovely timing. We also did some work around the importance of local research and local research questions, with particularly in the Eastern Wheat Belt with drought, and that was a lot of fun too. And some of those lessons you still take forward today. So, yeah, no, it was really good.
Yeah. And then after that, year after, you won the 2014 Emerald Grain 100 Women in Australian Agribusiness. That must have been pretty cool.
So that was a big list that was put out by Emerald Grain, and that was really exciting because there are obviously amongst that 99 other women who were also listed in there, and the texts were flying and the emails and the phone calls to say, oh, congratulations, which was really lovely. So I've still got no idea how I was nominated for that, but it was, yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. And from memory, I think we all got together in Melbourne, but that's 6 years ago now, so I cannot remember for the life of what happened there.
And then last year, the 2019 Ag Institute of Australia Award of Excellence. Massive pat on the back for that. Do you want to talk us through, you know, that experience? Because I'm sure, again, it was a pinch me moment for you.
So the West Australian Ag Institute phoned sort of earlier this year and said, oh, we've nominated you for an Award of Excellence, and it's awarded to a rural and or working in rural and regional Australia who's maintained their professional career, I guess, and has built their career being based in the regions. And it's a really great recognition because we often being based in regional, whether it's when I was in regional West Australia, regional South Australia, you're doing a lot of hours in the car to maintain your professional work networks and attend meetings and things that sometimes, if you're based in a capital city, that's a lot easier. I love being based in regional Australia. I get to look out my office window at, you know, ewes and lambs or crops. It's only 5 minutes into town. I'm part of a small rural community that is a really big part of who I am. And I get to see firsthand the industry or agriculture that I'm involved in, the impacts of the day-to-day, week-to-week, rainfall coming, rainfall not, when does hay start, when does harvest start, you know, all those sorts of things that that I think if you're based in the city, sometimes you you don't lose sight of it because we're a small industry and we all understand. But I do appreciate being based in the country for sure.
Speaking of being based in the country and the regions, you know, you've been a member of the Triple R network for a little while. You know, it feels to me like it's been a common thing of yours to be involved in a larger community, the larger community of agriculture in the regions. You know, how important is being a part of the Triple R network been for you and to really make use of that collegiate group of women who are all, you know, passionate about the same thing?
Yeah. So in 1996, I went across to Melbourne. I was still studying at Muresk with Curtin. So I went across to the International Rural Women's Conference in Melbourne, and there was a group of about 8 West Australians there, and one of those West Australians was a lady by the name of Marg Agnew from Esperance. Mm-hmm. And Marg had started the very first newsletter for rural women in the Esperance Port Zone. And it was, and I think I've probably still got it, it was an absolutely fantastic, I don't know, 12-page newsletter. And from there, Marg worked really hard to build up into the statewide newsletter that the Triple R network became. And then we watched people take it through to being more of a network with more networking events and things like that. So over the last, I'm not even going to pretend that that's not 25 years ago, over the last 25 years, we've sort of seen the West Australian Rural Remote Network grow and develop as the needs, and I guess as the needs of rural women have grown, and I guess too as we've become more professional about how we see ourselves in agriculture and we recognise the value we place on ourselves in agriculture grow as well. So it's been an absolutely integral part of my journey professionally, and as such I'm really, really pleased to be a member and will always be a member of the West Australian Triple R Network.
Beautiful. Like many of the other women in the Triple R Network, you're also a rural mum, which you touched on. You got Georgie there. You know, like many rural mums, your child attends, well, you'd normally attend boarding school. And I was reading an article from ABC Southeast South Australia on your family having to make decisions around what to do when your child's boarding school is in another state. How has that experience been for you?
That has, I guess, been very stressful, as you can probably hear in my voice, and very emotional. It has, so when it was time for Georgina to go to high school, it was a boarding school option. And where we are in South Australia, we're 100 kilometres off the Victorian border. Mm-hmm. At a place called Kalara between Kingston and Lucendale. So very high rainfall, very different to, I guess, Narrogin where we were in Western Australia and Lake Grace.
Yep.
And so she could go to Adelaide, 300 kilometres away, or we could send her to a regional boarding school in Hamilton. And we've been quite a big believer in regional boarding schools, just because of our values around community, family, small schools, the importance of kids being educated close to home, and the importance of education as well, not just for our rural and regional communities, but for agriculture as well. I think that we lose a lot of those skills that rural and regional Australia needs with kids potentially going away and not returning. It's awesome for them to go away to get the global experience, but geez, it'd be nice to see some of those skills come back too. So
yeah,
we chose to send Georgina into Victoria at the start of 2019, so that was year 2020 would come along and COVID would come along, and for everybody's health that a lot of our borders would need to be shut down. So for us, there is now a hard border closure in between South Australia and Victoria imposed by the South Australian government. We have got army patrols on the border. There are police checkpoints. So it is something that, as Australians, we've never seen before. So when you're approached or you see an army, you know, patrol person and police cars there when you're picking your child up from boarding school at the border, it's actually not a very pleasant experience. So we, so we had term two with remote learning because Victoria was shut down, and term three is again remote learning because yet again Victoria is in lockdown. So we have only had term one at school this year, which raises a lot of questions. And term, this, what are we, term three now? Term three is yet again in, as I said, remote learning. But we had 3 days' notice to basically get her out of Victoria if she wanted to return to South Australia. So the South Australian government now says if you are anywhere else in the world, you are not allowed back into South Australia. So obviously there are exemptions through the health department because they're not really that mean, but it is quite a scary experience. But the rural leadership programs for rural women, I guess, gave me the confidence to be able to approach the political leaders and take a stand and just to let people know that this is an issue that we need to be aware of. It's okay for people in metropolitan Adelaide to say, let's just close the border. If you're in Victoria, too bad. Well, hang on, no. There are schools, there are kids, there are families that actually this impacts on, and the border restrictions. So George has been home for 4 weeks now. The border restrictions have got worse. So we, along the border community, there's quite a lot of crossover with not only family but schools and shoppings and post offices and farms. And I guess for Federation, since Federation, we've been popping across that border as a community and not really thinking too much about it. So I'm following with a lot of interest the Federation conversations that are happening. And as a West Australian, I sort of, I'm actually a succession supporter. I think that WA could go it alone. South Australia can't. It doesn't have a big enough economy. But West Australia can. And it was little things like when George went across to boarding school for away before she had to come home, that I sent her with her passport. You think this is crazy, but that's just the time of the times we live in. And so now for us, it's reflecting, do we leave her at the school she loves or do we bring her back into South Australia where the South Australian kids are like the West Australian kids and they're at boarding school and life's continuing as normal. So that's a really hard decision as well for a family to look at changing schools. But this is just the new world and this is what we're dealing with in today.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? And, I mean, I went to boarding school and I was lucky. I was 150 k's down the road and not interstate. So I can't imagine as a parent being faced with the decision. And because ultimately you want the best education for your child, that's always what it comes down to when that boarding school conversation comes up for families. And to also have that added complex layer of, well, if they stay at boarding school, I might not see them for you know, it could be much, we don't know at this point in time how long it could be. So yeah, I feel everything you're saying and I'm sure you're so glad you've got Georgina home now.
Yes, yes. But remote learning is also hard. And I think that as rural women, we need to take my hands off hat off to all the pastoral women out there listening. Well done, you. As a wheat belt girl and as somebody who has always just got either I've got on the school bus and now my child's been on a school bus to go to school and come home, remote learning is really different. So she runs from sort of 8:30 to 2 o'clock every day on the computer, and that's fine. But I do still need to be there to make sure that talk to and that meals are done, you know, at lunchtime, that sort of thing. Even I went for a walk this morning with her as a part of her PE session. All these things that I've realised that if you were learning by school of the air or your child was, you'd be doing this. So hats off to all those remote women who do this day in, day out for 15 years. I think great job, you guys.
So true. I'm going to change tack now and ask, you know, what's in the future for you? What's next? Any blue sky ideas or exciting projects that you've got in the works?
So I had some meetings last week with Flinders University and the local PERSA over here. And I think this has been brought home with COVID-19, and that is the importance of local food. So all the local food producers, and I'm sure WA's has been the same, but over here on the East Coast, we've seen a double or a trebling of orders with COVID-19 as people come to recognise the importance of smaller chains, transport chains, of actually having access to safe local food. And it's a little bit of a get to know your farmer as well, and where your food comes from has become a lot more important. So I'm really keen to start exploring this model, and who knows where it will lead to. We've got some great innovative farmers doing on some things on small scale that I think that if we were able to encourage that and build a bit of a bigger support network, that they could grow into some major new industries for agriculture. And I think that is really exciting. It also comes out of a lot of the work that was done around climate change by CSIRO and different groups, around the need to look for more diversified ag industries, particularly in some of those regions that are affected by climate change, because we're not going to be able to keep up with increases in grain yield, basically, to meet that. So I think that's actually quite exciting. You know, imagine taking what is now a small niche business and growing it to over the next 5 to 10 years to a staff of, you know, 500 or 1,000 and exporting billions of dollars from regional communities. I just think that the opportunities are there, and that some of these small food producers just need a little bit of a hand, like potentially, or some of the lessons we've learned in growing some of our bigger, more traditional grazing, cropping type of businesses. So, yeah, very exciting stuff.
Yeah, it's an exciting time to be in agriculture. I say it every day, and yeah, couldn't agree more that, yeah, there's so many cool opportunities coming out right now, and we're just, again, adapting and moving forward.
Yeah, I think so.
So we always finish on our last question, which is how can people get in touch with you or find you if they've connected with your story or want to know more about you?
So I'm pretty readily available on a good old Google search. Just Google searching Danielle England tends to come up. If not, Ag Innovate is always there, both in the web and also Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. So yeah, love to catch up with people, and as I said before, networking, I call it networking because then it's a legitimate role. I love it. It's great fun. So please feel free to reach out if anybody wants to catch up or pick my brains.
Yeah, awesome. Danielle, thank you so much. You have been absolutely enlightening this morning, and it's been, yeah, a real pleasure chatting with you. And I really value that you've sat down with me this morning to share what's on your heart and your mind and what's going on in your life.
My pleasure, Kayla. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening to the Triple R Network podcast by Generation Ag. Stay tuned for another episode in this series in a fortnight's time.